Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
Coach Steve, how are you? Very, very good. I'm very good. Thank you very much.
I'm well, Nick. I'm well, and I'm excited because this week we have not only finished the challenge, the November challenge has wrapped up. For the Challenge Weekly Show, we have reached episode number 47, Nick. How exciting, number 47.
47.
Yeah, that's a long time to be with each other, Nick. And I haven't gotten sick of you yet. So hopefully you're staying around for a little bit longer.
We better not do 48 then, because I think 48 is the episode where you're going to get sick of me.
Well, look, in other news for the Challenge Weekly Show, after today's episode, we are going on a short break over the Christmas holiday period while the challenge is wrapped up for this November challenge. And then we'll be kicking off the Challenge Weekly Show in January, about that midpoint of January, maybe that second week of January, where we'll be starting off in episode number 48. So, Nick, I know you've had a lot of me for 47 episodes. You finally get a bit of a break, and then we'll be kicking off for episode number 48 next year.
I'll probably miss it, but I'll survive because, you know, it's only a couple of weeks without each other, and then we can think of some new and exciting topics as well. So you look out, everybody. You know,
it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Now, taking you back to the challenge, Nick, like I said, we have wrapped up the November challenge. The challenge is over, and gosh, that 6 weeks has just flown by, hasn't it?
Yeah, I found this one to be incredibly quick. I think it's just because there's so much going on, but suddenly you blink and it's over. So I think everybody's done a wonderful job staying on track. And from what I can see in the group, there are some amazing results yet again. So good on everybody for seeing it through.
Yeah, congratulations to everyone who was uploading their final photos to our Facebook social hub, and then also onto our journals and even on Instagram. So it's really cool to see some of the results individuals were able to achieve over that 6 week period. Absolutely amazing. It always blows me away every time. And it's inspiring for me when I see these amazing transformations. Now, talking about some key dates as of today. So when this podcast is published, you have until midnight tonight to upload your final photos. That's Tuesday, the 14th of December. You have until midnight tonight to upload your final photo. Now, we do have some challenges emailing us at, you know, 11:30 or even 12:30. So coming into Wednesday morning, 12:30, and they say, oh, I've missed out, or I've run out of time, or, you know, it logged me out, or I wasn't able to complete my final photos. So cutoff is midnight tonight, so make sure you get that done. So if you're listening to this now and you haven't uploaded your final photos and you want to participate in the final judging process and the final challenge process, go do it now. We'll take you just a couple of minutes to upload your photo and answer some of those final questions, complete your profile, submit it all, done, over, and it's exciting times. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you finish it, because you've completed the challenge. You've got to be in it to win it, and it's worth showing off your hard work.
That's right. Running through some other key dates, tomorrow, so Wednesday, the 15th of December, we have our public voting opening. So you'll be able to vote for your favorite challenges as of Wednesday morning until Sunday midnight. That's Sunday, the 19th of December. So you've got, 4 or 5 days to vote for your favorite challenges. So you can vote for both Max and Maxine. So guys, you can log into the Maxine website, and girls, you can log into the Max's website, and you can vote for your favorite transformations there. And you can also get your friends and family to vote as well. So they will just need to go to the challenge websites, create a voting profile so that we know that they're human, and then go through and complete a vote as well. So that's exciting times, the public voting for the people's vote award. And that's a separate competition to our main judging process. So if you are maybe not in the top 50 in the public voting, or not in the top 10 in the public voting, that doesn't mean that you've missed out on making maybe the top 50 or the top 10 or even winning the challenge. So make sure you do participate in that public voting, but make sure that you're not getting too disheartened if you're not a crowd favorite or anything, because hey, you know, maybe Sally down the road has hundreds of friends all in her office and she's getting everyone to vote for her, which is fine. That's awesome. People's vote goes to her, but that person might not end up winning the challenge themselves.
Absolutely. And that goes for everybody, even in if you get into the top 10 or not, or top 50. Remember that you've done such a good job, and just try and remember that it's your own personal journey, and try not to compare to anybody else. And I think, you know, when it's your time, it's your time. So you've just done a great job by getting through first up.
Other key dates, Nick, is next Tuesday, the 21st of December, we will be announcing the top 50. And then on the Wednesday, the next day, so the 22nd of December, we'll be announcing our finalists in our Challenge Awards night, which will be live streamed to our Facebook social hub. That's going to be kicking off at 7:30 p.m. Melbourne time. Coach Nick and I will be live announcing our finalists. It's going to be a really cool event. And then on the Thursday, the next day, which is the 23rd of December, the website closes. So you have up until Thursday, the 23rd of December, to go to the Challenge website if you want to download any copies of the training templates or the nutrition templates, maybe to download your journal, ask a question on the forum, whatever it is, you have up until the 23rd of December before the website closes, and then prepare for our January challenge.
Yeah, so don't forget to do that. Don't forget to get all your hard work, your training plans, everything locked in by then.
That's right. Now, talking about the January challenge will be kicking off on the 31st of January. 31st of January, we'll be starting the challenge, and we are bringing back the prep week. So prep week will start on the 24th of January. And then on the 31st of January, we'll be starting our 12-week challenge. So we're bringing back the 12-week model. We've experimented with a 6-week model. Was a really great success, saw some really great results, but we are reverting back to that 12-week model, kicking off on the 31st of January. How exciting, Nick?
Oh, it's a great time to kick off. And I was telling my family last night that that's when it starts, and my daughter informed me that that's when she starts high school. I mean, as a mum, I should probably know, but how good is that? Because it's going to coincide for a lot of people with preparing things, you know, helping their kids with their lunches and preparing meals. So you can really kind of get in sync with everybody to be nice and organized for the start of the year.
Yeah, I like that. And prep week is always a good one in the January challenge. It often has Australia Day thrown in there. So any Aussies out there who like to celebrate Australia Day, that's cool. Also know there are some people who don't like to celebrate Australia Day, that's cool as well. But that gets thrown into the middle there. So that could be the first challenge that you have in January, or for the January challenge is the Australia Day public holiday. So maybe you have any traditions to have people over for a barbecue or a few beers. That might be your very first challenge within the challenge. Then, of course, a really important date thrown in there as well, which is the 27th of January, which is Coach Steve's birthday. So that's a really important day. Should be a public holiday as well. But another challenge time, because, you know, some of us might be celebrating Coach's birthday. So, you know, you got to throw that in the works as well.
Absolutely. Well, that's probably the most important date in January.
It really is, Nick.
Yeah. And that's our first challenge as well. You know, how do we get through celebrating Coach Steve's birthday?
I know, right?
Off the rails. Are you going to have some dip on your birthday?
Oh, look, I need to have dip away from me on my birthday, but it might make an appearance in my house for a very short period of time.
One tub of dip for your birthday, and you'll probably train it away anyway, because you're probably close to getting that. What's your figure that you want to get for your bench?
150 on the bench, yeah.
So you have your tub of hummus, and then you go out to your garage and bench 150.
I think that's a plan. I think I need like a little candle on my tub of hummus, and I'll be set. That'll be a great birthday.
That's your ideal birthday. I think really said, you know, apart from you have baby George there, you have Laura there, and you get your bench PB, and then moving on. You know,
that'd be a great way to start to start my final year of my 20s. It'd be a great way to start.
Yes. However, you being you, you would say to me, actually, that's not programmed in that day. So
I'd be like, no, that day is actually legs day, Nick.
I know. So yeah. You're like, you're probably looking at your program now going, I don't know what you're talking about. It's a Wednesday or something. So yeah, you know.
Okay. Talking about the challenge again, you know, thinking about the January challenge, Nick, we are making some small tweaks to the way that we are programming the challenge. So one example is I've been spending lots of time updating the nutrition template and turning it more into a nutrition workbook. Think of it like a workbook, something that is living and breathing, something that you provide input into, and then it provides an output back to you. So slowly turning it into a bit more of a workbook style, introducing that 12-week model, as well as the that 6-week model where we had the customized nutrition plan for you and your body type. And then we're also reintroducing some features that might be familiar to those who trialed my adaptive physique template last year. So if you've been around the challenge life for a couple of years, you might have tested out my program, the adaptive physique template. So some of those advanced concepts might be reintroduced into the nutrition workbook as we move into the January challenge. So that's going to be really exciting, being able to provide you with a great tool that you can use to get the best result that you possibly could within the challenge. But then also understand that there are many people that look at the spreadsheet and it's a little bit too complex, too many moving parts, and they just want a PDF. That's cool. We'll still always have a PDF available for you that you can just simply download, stick it to your fridge, and then away you go, and you don't ever need to touch any of our spreadsheets or any of our other tools that we create to help you along the way.
Yeah, you know what, you've been showing me and we've been having a look together, and I'm very excited about this one. I'm loving the look of it. I can't reveal anything yet, but it's definitely something that's pretty special.
It's going to be really cool. I'm excited for everyone to play around with it and really push it to its limits. And hopefully, if I get a few moving parts working well, it's going to be the best program we've ever launched, which is going to be really cool.
Yeah, I believe that to be the case. I'll put myself out there and say that. You know, you can quote me and you.
Now, Nick, within the challenge ethos, you know, we're always talking about self-improvement and always talking about ways that we can improve ourselves, you know, reflecting on our process and, you know, readjusting our strategies so that we can get the best results for our body, but then also for the best results within the challenge. And part of that is to ask for your feedback. So if you're listening to this, Coach Nick and I would like your feedback on the challenge experience. So I'd like you to let us know, you know, what things you like about the challenge, what things you don't like about the challenge, what things would you like to see from the challenge or maybe from us, or even things within this podcast, things that you might enjoy, don't like, maybe you don't like my jokes, or maybe
nothing
we can do about that. That's part of me. But look, this week you'll be receiving an email with a short form that I'm going to ask you to fill out where you can offer us advice. It's completely anonymous, so you can leave any honest advice that you'd like to give us or any feedback you'd like to provide us. And then you'll also be able to find this link on our Facebook social hub, which I'll make a post shortly within this week. And you'll be able to find that and you can offer us some feedback as well. You can leave us positive feedback, negative feedback, whatever it is. I've got thick skin, so I'll take it. But, you know, we're always trying to find ways to improve the challenge, just like how we're inviting you to find ways to improve your transformation, your experience with fitness and your experience with health, whatever that means to you.
Yeah, and as coaches, we're always learning. So, you know, we need to tap into what you guys want to know from us, what you think that we should hold back on, anything like that, and we'll be able to adapt to that and probably make the experience even better for you. Yeah, but you can't really say about Steve's jokes because there is nothing we can do.
No, look, they are getting better now that I'm a dad. Like some of them have been like,
yeah,
they're a crowd favorite when I hit it out a joke,
you know, because now that you are a dad, they kind of fit with your vibe.
Okay, Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week. And of course, we've probably got lots of non-scale victories for this week, being the last week of the challenge. Many challengers going through their final reflection of their journey over the past 6 weeks. But Nick, here, take us away. What non-scale victories have you found this week?
All right, so the first one I found was Mel Cook. Hello, Mel. How are you? So welcome to NSV land. Mel Cook says, final flex Friday and a massive NSV for me. This is my 15-year-old son. So for context, there was a picture who has watched me work out throughout the first challenge At the start of this challenge, when most teenagers don't want much to do with their parent, this kid has been my motivation and my why. Working out with me, encouraging me, and nights I haven't felt like going to the gym, a simple come on, mum, is all I've needed. Well, that is heartwarming, isn't it?
So, that's awesome. I like that.
At 15 also, I mean, they can take such little interest in what we're doing, or they can be embarrassed by it that, you know, it can change at any day. So just to have that enthusiasm and the care and also the engagement with what his mum is doing is just, it's just heartwarming. I love that. Good on you, Mel.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Next one I've got is Amy Godsell. Now, Amy says, things I'm proud of since starting the challenge. Number one, not missing one single gym session. So that's pretty good. Over the 6 weeks, every single session ticked off. Dropping one whole dress size. So that's also amazing. And three, she has had three people comment on how good she's looking. So, you know, that, as I've said before, when people start to notice that you've changed, because people often are wrapped up in their own kind of business. So when they're noticing, there is a significant change on you. So well done. Well done, Amy. You can't buy that. That's your hard work. So shout out to you, Amy.
That's awesome, Amy. Congratulations.
So the next one we've got is my mate Carmen Woodenberg. So Carmen, how are you? I've seen your results on the Facebook group this time as well. You're looking amazing. You're a hard worker. So Carmen says, my NSV is going into summer feeling my best probably ever. I feel strong and damn proud of this year's achievements. I brought my first pair of shorts, not the usual knee-length ones, but actual shorts. Oh, Carmen. I love this because many women will relate to this. They will, pretty much every second client that I've ever trained has been like, I'm not wearing shorts. Even in the gym, if it's boiling hot, there's just a thing. Women that can be so self-conscious about that. So the whole idea of going into summer, having set yourself up for that so you know that you want to feel good and not have that as a worry, and you've worked really hard on that, that's just brilliant, Carmen. I love that. It's such a good goal to have, to just feel better, and then it's going to radiate towards the whole family. You'll be in a great mood. You'll be looking awesome. You'll enjoy your summer.
You're very cool, Carmen. I love that. That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
I found a couple, Nick, this week. So the first one here goes to someone who I know is probably listening now, Nicola Gibb. We can't leave out Nicola because we know at the start of this challenge, she wanted to hashtag shred for the red and was a non-scale victory participant for shred for the red. And it looks like she's really shredded for the red, which is awesome. So let's highlight Nicola here for a moment. And she writes, this is my third challenge and each challenge has been so different. I learned so many valuable things each round. This challenge, I had had to focus on learning how to eat for volume because she was kind of going through a building phase. And while she's trying to shred for the red, really cool. I trained hard and did my best to challenge myself each day. I'm not where I want to be, but I am not where I used to be, which is cool. I like that because she's really thinking about how she's not at the end goal yet, because we often have those moving goalposts, but she's not where she was, which is really cool. I really love writing down the weight that I'm using on the spreadsheet. It gives me such a sense of achievement. I am receiving so many compliments at the gym. I'm feeling good inside my own skin, and wearing clothes that I feel and look good in is the best gift. The red bikini is center stage this round. Hashtag tread for the red. And I love that, Nicola. Congratulations for achieving your goal. It's been awesome to see your posts on our Facebook social hub, and also on places like our the journals as well. So, Nicola, big congratulations to you. And I'm sure you've been a role model to lots of people within your environments, your day-to-day life, and also our online communities, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I'll just also say for Nicola, I love seeing her sheet because she writes it all down on a paper sheet and it is full. So she's keeping track of everything, and it's like this great representation of the entire challenge, just all written down on pen and paper. You don't see much of that anymore. So I quite like it being
that. I did like that too. I saw that photo and it was cool because it really represented the journey, because the paper was a bit torn and folded and, you know, scribbled all over and such. And that's really like what the challenge is about. You know, you could see the hard work in the training by what the training program looked like by the end of the 6 weeks. That's really cool. Congratulations, like, to the club.
Like in maths, when they used to say, show you're working out, you know, you can't just show the final sum, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. And I like that, because she can, if anyone goes, oh, it must have been easy for you, and she can just hold that piece of paper up and go, no.
No, look what I did. Yeah. The next one here goes to a challenge veteran, Chris Spratt. Now, Chris Spratt has made the top 10 twice. Once before my time, before I was Coach Steve, he was part of the top 10. And then again, just a couple of years ago, top 10, Chris Spratt. And he writes in his journal, day 41, training was weights. And he writes, steps was 21,964. Geez, that's a busy day. Nutrition, he writes, on point. Positive note, setting goals and achieving them is so gratifying. Additional note, fine-tuning goals post-challenge and start to the new year. So I like this, Chris, where he's talking about, you know, goal setting. And for someone like Chris, long-time challenge veteran, long-time in the fitness space, long-time, you know, in the training environment, you know, really built his life around training and you know, really is a role model to many of us who go, hey, you know, the challenge thing or the fitness thing isn't just an in and out idea. It is something that we want to build for a lifetime. And, you know, Chris really highlighted that, and he's even setting up goals for the new year. So that's really awesome, Chris.
Yeah, I love just also, he just writes exactly just those points and gets them out of his head, writes them as a list, and is very efficient with it. So that's a good way to do it.
And finally here, we have Rihanna Johnston, and she writes, we are back in the office at work and I pulled a size 10 shirt from the uniform drawer to try it on. It fits. I have not been able to wear a size 10 in our work shirts for at least 3 years. Happy is an understatement. I feel confident, proud, and excited that I am on the right track. Surprise non-scale victory unlocked. I love that, Rihanna. That's really cool. And, you know, you've gone and utilized something like clothes fitting as a metric about your challenge experience. And congratulations, now you're able to fit in a size 10 shirt, something that you haven't been able to do for 3 years. So you should be very proud of that, because, you know, I'm proud of you for doing that. So big congratulations.
Good on you. Good on you, Rihanna. I think that's amazing. How exciting.
So big congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. And of course, all of our non-scale victory participants over the past 6 weeks, and everybody who has found their non-scale victories in their own lives over this challenge. And of course, the challenge over 2021. So I think it's important that we highlight the wins that might not be related to, you know, what's happening in the gym or what's happening to our body weight or anything like that, and really focusing on how, you know, fitness is this, you know, representation of life. It's a boiling pit of life where, you know, sometimes when we start the fitness journey, where we start losing weight, start feeling confident in ourselves, start feeling healthier and feeling good about ourselves, that translates over into our life. And that might mean that we maybe, you know, change our relationships, or maybe we ask for a promotion at work, or we relocate somewhere, or we, you know, tell someone to piss off, or tell someone to be more part of my life, you know, whatever it is, you know, that fitness space is sometimes the driving point of life. So, you know, keep looking for those non-scale victories, keep working hard, and, you know, keep working towards our goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. Love it.
Nick, from here, let's move into our coach's corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Hello, everybody. I would like to talk to you about your summer. So, and when I say your summer, I don't mean the entire summer, because I know that kids go to school, you know, work starts again. But what I'm talking about is that thing that we really call summer where we are, which is probably, it starts in like, say, next week. And then it goes all the way through to just past New Year's. And then I would probably have to say it is sort of, I think everybody finishes it on that 26th of January. No matter really what you do, it's sort of that traditional, you go away. It's usually quite warm, although I must say over the last few years it's been a little bit cold and annoying. But it's that time where there's not a lot of structure. There's a lot of memes about you kind of lose days, you lose track of days, time, you don't know what's going on. You know, people, especially now that everybody's allowed out, you know, you might be celebrating, you might catch up with family, you might have drinks, you might go away, you might be in a different spot to where you are. So I would have to say that it is pretty important to find some sort of consistency and routine within that. So then you're not starting again from the very, very start on the 31st of January when we start the challenge again, simply because then you'll just be playing catch up with yourself to get to the level that you're at now for that 12 weeks. So some strategies to just have a bit of fun, quote unquote, but still maintain your consistency. So firstly, welcome to the world of maintenance. Now, maintenance isn't super exciting because it's your maintenance calories. It's the calories that you will require just to maintain your body weight. So you won't gain, you won't lose. And I'm not saying that daily fluctuations won't happen, but in terms of your just general self, you're not going to, nothing's going to happen to you. So those calories, if you can find those, that's something that I don't think that many people even think about. They go, wait a minute, I'm raising my calories from dieting. Does that mean I'm going to put on weight? No, you're in a calorie deficit. So if it brings you back up to maintenance, that's where you can sit. And that might give you just a little bit of opportunity to eat that little bit of extra food or plan it into your day, or have, if you needed to have a drink or whatever, then you could factor it in. Now, I'm not the hugest fan of fitting a million things into your day because I sort of feel like there's room for error there and certain foods fit in that may not be that nutritious for you. So, but over this period in time, this is just a strategy. You can go to maintenance. You can kind of start to track what's going on there. So then at least you can be even to where you are now when you start the next challenge. Now, if you can't make it to the gym, or if, you know, sometimes when it's super hot, you don't plan your day very well and you don't get there in time. I mean, I suggest to go early in the morning, especially if you've got a holiday. I suggest to just get it done. But you can move more. So you can swim, you can hike, you can walk with friends and get out in the sunshine. So it's a really good time to just interact with the world. And often, you know, getting out into the sunlight, obviously if you've got to wear your sunscreen, all that sort of stuff, but it can actually sometimes reset you, and you can accidentally end up, you know, getting quite lean and losing a bit of body fat without even trying, just simply because you're moving more, you've got the sunlight, you might be drinking more water, you know, you're actually not as stressed. So just actually play with that side of life for a little while as well, because sometimes I'll go on a holiday and I won't even think about anything. I'll just be lying down, reading a book in the sunlight, moving, swimming, and I come back and I'm like, oh, hang on a minute, I'm a bit ripped here and I haven't tried. But whereas all year I've been sitting there staring at things and measuring and tracking, and you know, things have shifted very slowly. So it's just interesting when we stop stressing, and we might get a little more sleep as well. So prioritize that. Just prioritize relaxing a little bit and see what happens. A lot of people that I know that are reasonably lean are very relaxed individuals. I mean, not bodybuilders, but just in general, those people that you go, wait a minute, they don't stress that much. So yeah, keep your gym routine if you can, and set yourself some goals for the gym over this time. So, you know, you might want to work on your technique. You might tell yourself, I'm not going to go super hard in my sessions, but then when you get in, you know, you might actually do okay. And yeah, what are your goals, Steve? I know that we spoke about the 150 kilo bench, but have you got a few goals that you've got set for yourself for the new year, just so people can see how somebody would structure that?
Yeah, yeah. So the first thing I'd say is that I wouldn't necessarily have goals that are labeled, you know, my 2022 goals, other than Tuesday, because I'm excited about Tuesday. But, you know, my goals are kind of like still my goals that are right now, things that I'm working towards. So, you know, I have been quite open about, you know, some of the numbers that I'm trying to hit. You know, my goals right now are closely linked to strength related goals as opposed to body composition related goals. So with the bench press that I'm working on right now, I'm aiming for that 150 kilo bench press. The most I've done is 145. So I'm trying to get that extra little bit, 150. Then I also want to hit the 220 kilo squat. The most I've done there is 210. So I've been working towards that kind of as a second priority. And then for the deadlift, I do want to get the 250 kilo deadlift, and I've gotten 245 before, really uglily, that's a word, really ugly 245 deadlift, but I do want to get the 250 deadlift. And I know that, you know, I can't get all three of those goals at the exact same time. So I do need to kind of like work on, you know, each one in different phases. So for example, right now I'm working on the bench press as number one, squat number two. And when it comes to deadlifts, I'm not actually doing any heavy deadlifts. I'm only doing like RDLs or like a stiff legged deadlift, so that I'm working towards that squat pattern. And then as I transition into like January, maybe February, I'll be kind of shifting it where bench will kind of become third priority. Deadlift will shift up to number one, and then the squat will still hang around number two. So I'm kind of like rotating, thinking kind of like long-term in phases. And that means that, you know, it's not really January 1st, 2022 that, you know, my goal is now this. It's something that my goal is still actually right now. And I'm working towards that as I transition into 2022.
Well, I love that. They're life goals. And I'm similar to you in that I plod along. That's actually not the right way to say it, but like in terms of like I don't need sort of a specific goal to get me motivated. I just like I know where I need to be. But because the half Ironman got cancelled this year, I've still got an entry in it. So I figured I'll do that at the end of the year. But before that, I think I'll compete in season B. But that means that I'll be nice and lean for the Ironman, which that can't hurt. So that kind of carries over, because the less you have to carry, the better it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then just prior to that, I am going to do a powerlifting comp early in the year, just because I can, like, as in, why not? You know, so I've got a few different irons in the fire. We'll see whether I can achieve all those different things, because they're all very, very different. But, you know, that's the beauty of life and sort of knowing how to manipulate your body when you get to this, I guess, training age. So you can kind of dip in and out of all of that. So I'm going to have a bit of fun all over the place. Like, where's Wally?
Yeah, I like that. It's three very different goals. Powerlifting.
I know.
Season B, which is in October, and then Ironman, what would be this time next year?
Yeah, so yeah. I'd come off season B and I'd be pretty weak, but in terms of then just being able to do that endurance stuff, I know myself well enough to know that that's probably a great time to do it, because all you need to do is just eat up a little bit, fuel yourself, and off you go.
And off you go.
But for me also, though, it'll be more the celebration of that. So a bit of fun on the bike and a bit of fun on the run in Melbourne, you know, around the St Kilda area, just saying hi to everyone and stuff. So I think if I can achieve all of that by this time next year, I'll be a happy camper. Plus also, obviously, being the best coach I can be to everyone else.
No, that's awesome. Well, I'm sure that myself and other challengers will come and support you in the Ironman, and maybe even come and support your show in October.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then maybe powerlifting, I'll be there too. So who knows, all three events, I might be there.
Awesome. Cool. You can scream at me. You can go.
I'll do the classic like back slap as you go to lift, like whack. Yeah. Because that's something people do.
That'd be perfect. Thank you. Yeah. So anyway, you can, as I've just said, but you know, you can have a bit of fun with it. Like I take it all seriously, but at the same time, I just love the fact that I can put my body through all these different sorts of things. It's not the biggest deal in the world. No one's got a gun to my head. I want to do it all. And so just set yourself goals that you want to do. That's the other thing, not something that someone else wants for you. So 2022 for everyone's going to be an awesome year.
I like that, especially what you said just at the end there, where, you know, set a goal that you want, not that what you think other people want of you as well. Because if you want to achieve a goal because you think other people want you to achieve that goal, like, you're not going to do it because it's not what you're really interested in. So
I sort of see it a little bit where people are like, oh, I should be building muscle, and they think that that's going to solve everything. But if you don't feel comfy and you know if you haven't had a chance of being lean yet and that's what you want to do, go after it. You know, you can do whatever you want in this space, and that's the beautiful thing. It's your body, and we've got strategies for every single outcome. So just pay attention to what the strategy would be to achieve that outcome and go for it.
I like it. Mm. I like it. Nick, I want to talk a little bit around training and offer advice about the concept of the stimulus to fatigue ratio.
Yeah.
Okay. Stimulus to fatigue ratio. And the idea is that we want to, when choosing exercises, when selecting the exercises that we are completing or the variations of certain exercises or the technique of certain exercises, we can really come back to the concept of the stimulus to the fatigue that that exercise gives you. So the ultimate goal when we're looking at resistance training or strength training is that we're trying to stimulate the body for an adaptation. We're not simply just trying to fatigue it, because it's really easy to make someone fatigued. And I learned this very quick as a personal trainer, where you could just tell someone do 100 burpees, you'd be pretty tired. You know, you won't stimulate much adaptation other than maybe getting better at burpees. But, you know, you're really good at making someone fatigued, making someone tired. And that's not the goal of training, because we're trying to train the body to adapt to something. We're trying to stimulate our muscles. We're trying to stimulate our nervous system so that we can, you know, move a load quickly, or we can, you know, build our biceps or build our glutes, where we're trying to stimulate adaptation. Okay. Now, when we're trying to determine, when we're trying to determine the stimulus to fatigue ratio, we can first ask ourselves questions about how stimulating is a certain exercise. It comes down to three main components. Number one, we can talk about the mind-muscle connection. So, you know, take a bicep curl as an example. We know that there's lots of ways to do a bicep curl. We can do a supinated bicep curl, a supinating bicep curl. We can do an incline bicep curl, a decline bicep curl. We could do spider curls. We could do Bayesian curls. We could do it with an easy bar, straight bar, dumbbells, cables, resistance bands. We can look at it and go, hey, it is all just a bicep exercise. Surely they're the same. Or we could take it that next step, understand that all those little differences will be very individual and have a different experience to each person. And everybody will have a different connection to their muscle. So when you're choosing an exercise, the first thing, mind-muscle connection, we want to lean towards those exercises where we really feel our muscle working. You know, take example for me and let's say my hamstring training. For the longest time, RDLs, I never felt my hamstrings. No matter how many different variations, grip width, how much I hip hinge, how much load I use, I couldn't feel my hamstrings. I feel it more in my like hips, my low back. It wasn't a stimulating exercise for me. When I modified the exercise and it kind of turned it into more of a stiff-legged deadlift all the way down to the floor and really lent my body back into a hip hinge, that's when I really started to feel my hamstrings. So now I lean towards more of a stiff-legged deadlift as opposed to a Romanian deadlift. And for some people, they're the same exercise, but when you kind of go into that advanced area, you know, they do have their slight differences. So that's an example of the mind-muscle connection. When you're choosing your exercises, think about the variations, what gives you the most stimulus when it comes to feeling the mind-muscle connection. The next one with stimulus comes down to the pump. We all know what the pump is, you know, that feeling where the muscle is about to explode, but it's pumped up. And that's the same concept. Some exercises, you know, you really feel a big pump. You know, let's say a certain back exercise by a certain machine, you're using that machine, you're like, oh, geez, I feel my back, it's about to explode. But then other machines, you're doing the exercise, and you're like, I don't even feel my back. You know, there's no muscle, my muscle connection, there's no pump. It's not a stimulating exercise for my back. And then finally, we could look at the overall concept of muscle disruption. So you've probably done an exercise, let's say like a chest fly. You've done it with dumbbells, you've done it with cables, you've done it with a machine pec deck. And for me, when I use a machine pec deck, oh geez, I feel my pecs. I feel the muscle fibers. I almost feel every muscle fiber. I feel the pump in my pecs. And then afterwards, it almost like it aches, like the muscles, like, oh geez, it's been disrupted. Something's changed like on a deep level in my pecs. And it doesn't actually happen like that in physiology, but you know, mentally I'm like, oh geez, I have caused disruption in my pecs. And I can be certain of that where I do maybe my first set, I do 15 reps. The second set, I can only do 10 reps. And the third set, I can only do 5 reps. Okay, I've caused disruption in my muscle where I can no longer complete the same amount of reps as I did previously. I have inter-set fatigue. So for me, that exercise is a highly stimulating exercise. So take that approach in your own training. Are there certain exercises where you feel a really big mind-muscle connection, you feel a really big pump, and you feel that muscle disruption? And does that happen through certain ways of doing the exercise, through certain machines, through certain tools like cables or resistance bands or maybe body weight? And then are there other exercises which are just donuts? You know, you don't feel the mind-muscle connection no matter how hard you try. Maybe it is maybe it's a deadlift, maybe it's a squat, maybe your body just doesn't like it. And you might be better doing other exercises to stimulate your body. Now, on the flip side, talking about fatigue, 3 main components. Number 1 is joint and connected tissue stress. So maybe you've done an exercise and you're just like, oh, geez, my back, I feel it deep, it's sore. My shoulders, my knees, Like those exercises really highly fatiguing. Maybe you don't want to lean towards those exercises and find ones that are more stimulating. Another one could be perceived exertion. And this is why things like a deadlift, most bodybuilders will choose not to complete a deadlift because it's a really highly exertion exercise, if that's correct English, where it takes a lot of effort to complete a deadlift. And it might have a, you know, maybe a low to moderate stimulation effect, but then a really high fatigue. So that ratio, it's like, well, it might be better to do other exercises than a deadlift because of the perceived exertion it takes to complete that exercise. And then finally is non-target muscle stress. Take, for example, let's say a deadlift as well. If you're trying to do a deadlift to train maybe your glutes, but you feel it the most in like your erector spinae, you know, that big back muscle, if you feel it the most there, okay, maybe that is a really fatiguing exercise, not targeting the glutes. So it's not super stimulating, really high fatigue, and maybe there's better exercises for you. So take that idea of the stimulus to fatigue ratio when you're choosing your training template. So if you see some of the exercises on that training program, or maybe a program that you've created, and you have a really low stimulation and a really high fatigue, okay, maybe there's a better exercise that you can do that goes the opposite way, where it's really stimulating and then provides a really low level fatigue, so that we can really stimulate our body to adapt to the training that we're trying to complete.
Very good. Yeah, I can completely relate to that. And it's just funny because if you look at too much Instagram, people are constantly going on about, I feel the pump. And sometimes, yeah, you do just go, wait a minute, from that. And, there are so many exercises out there. You don't have to just do what everyone else is doing at all. You've got to really listen to the way that your body works. And, I love your RDL example. That's a good one.
And we know that everybody has those individual variations. Some exercises will just be better just because of how you approach that certain exercise. And it's okay to make minor modifications. For example, myself, when I start a new mesocycle, I might throw in a few exercises that I haven't done for a while. I do them for 1 week. I do them for another week. And I'm just like, I'm just not feeling it. I don't want to waste my time trying to, you know, drive my head against this wall to complete this exercise when I'm not getting a good stimulus. I'm not feeling the muscle. I'm not getting a pump. If anything, it's just making me tired. Okay, I'm choosing to get rid of this exercise and then go into another exercise. The only side point on that is that if you do an exercise just for 1 week, it might not be giving that exercise justice because you've just kind of given it one attempt. It might take, you know, 1 or 2 or even 3 weeks for you to learn how to do that exercise. Then you have that light bulb moment, which is why I often go back to old exercises that I've determined as in like the scrap pile for myself. I revisit them, give them another go. It reconfirms my previous decision of, okay, this exercise, I don't like it. I prefer these exercises. And then I go in that direction. So we do kind of need to give ourselves some time, especially some of those like hard exercises like a squat or a deadlift. If you kind of throw them in the I don't do those exercises pile, you're never going to do those exercises, and you might need to spend some time learning how to do those exercises so that you can progress moving forward.
Yeah, even the other day when I was doing a hack squat, done it millions of times, but I was like, oh, if I just move my knees in this way, I can feel my quads so much more. And that's after like millions of squats in my lifetime. So we're always learning, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really have to be in tune with how your muscles responding, the movement. You know, I think you need to master the movement first before you decide that it's no good for you.
That's right. Yeah.
I love that, though. I love this topic. We could go on forever about it. It's brilliant. It's everything.
It's everything. Mm-hmm. Nick, from here, let's answer some questions for the week. The first one here is, why is meal prep so important?
Ooh. So Nick,
what advice would you give this person?
Why is meal prep so important? Well, I don't know statistically whether people who meal prep get better results. I don't have the exact stats on that, but I would have to put my bum on the line to say that I think that people who meal prep have a better chance of getting good results simply because there's a lot of consistency with meal prep. So if you're bulk meal prepping, because that's sort of the premise behind meal prep preparation, then you are completely in control of what goes into your mouth. At least usually people, if you're bulk meal prepping, you'll have at least one or two meals done for the day, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 days in advance. And if you're like that, you probably then prep again and do it again. So consistency is really what gets us results, whether you are consistent at 80%, or some people say they're 100%, 100% of the time. It might be 100%, 60% of the time, like Anchorman. 60% of the time, all of the time. But even 60% of the time, all of the time, is still consistent. So you will get results if you stay there. You can't really, as I like to say, you can't manage what you can't measure. I did not make that up, but it's very, very true. So the consistency of meal prep also, I personally love, if I'm going for a super, super lean look for any reason, I love to make sure that I'm having the same types of foods over and over again. So then I'm not introducing anything that's too unknown for what my goal is. And if your goal is to get ultra lean, you can't really afford to make food mistakes. So it takes out any margin of error. Also, because we traditionally really underreport what we eat, if we're measuring and putting it all together and we've got it all there and we don't have any other options for ourselves, we really are definitely able to eliminate that as a source of why our program might not be working for us. Because as coaches, it's really hard for us to know if your program's working or not if we're not sure exactly what you're eating. But if you showed us a photo of your meals all prepped out in those little containers, and this is what I'm doing and I'm not doing anything else, we would be able to say, okay, that looks pretty good. So we'd be able to eliminate that as a possible cause of not getting the results that you're after. It also takes the emotion out of food. So that might be a bit controversial, because a lot of people, a lot of cultures, I mean, I'm Italian, you know, food is life. It's part of our gathering. It's something that we share together. But just in terms of if you want body composition results, it's really good to remove that emotional attachment, which actually is just about spending time with your family anyway. It's about being together. It's about sharing an experience. So you can take the emotion out of food. And it also means if you've had bad experiences with food, you can kind of reintroduce yourself to what food actually does to your body. Now, we don't have to go as far as saying it's fuel, but somewhere in between is good. So it doesn't cause a huge reaction in you. For example, say my daughter was making, I gave my daughter the ingredients to make gingerbread men. I didn't give her a gingerbread men packet. I said, you go and you do this. You produce some gingerbread men with a recipe. And she did that. And I was able to go, okay, well, I'm not going to have any of these, but she's used to that. But let's package them up and let's give them to the neighbors. Let's give them to Nonna, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I had a bite to say it's beautiful. I'm not cruel. But what I'm saying is I didn't look at all the gingerbread stars at nighttime and go, I need to eat these, you know, that kind of a thing, because I know that that's not going to serve me. But I wasn't sad about it either, because I knew how joyous it was. It was, the house smelled beautiful, and it was such a beautiful experience with her making those and being able to do that from scratch. And Yeah, so it just removes that choice. So my last example of that, the choice kind of thing, is anyone who's got kids and knows that when you've got a free uniform day where you can just wear casual clothes, I don't know about your household, but it just throws a spanner in the works. There's too much variety there, and it just causes an explosion of emotions. So you might already have emotions around routine, training, other things. So if you can nail that meal prep, it's just a way to remove that choice from yourself. And that's, a lot of people will struggle with that because they want to feel like they're allowed to have anything. But for ultimate body composition, for ultimate health, you probably are not allowed to have everything. And that, let me just say that. So, you know, you can respond to this and say, how dare you? I want you to do that. If you disagree with me, please let me know. But I really think that you do have to narrow things down and be in control of what's going on for that ultimate body composition. That is why meal prep is so important.
I like it. Good answer. I think you nailed it on the head, where it's all about practicing the meals that we're having. It's all about some consistency, taking the emotion out of it, and then just really taking the choice out of it. Because if everything's kind of like done, you know that I'm going to eat this food at this time and I don't need to think about it later, and then you could probably spend more time on the things that you love, like weight training and playing with your kids.
I know that every time we're in the office at 2:30 on a Tuesday, Coach Steve is going to eat leftover spaghetti bolognese from the night before. There's just no doubt about that. So, you know, the consistency there is why you're able to get the results that you get for yourself. So whether it's strength or, you know, aesthetic goals or whatever it is that you want to do, it's simply because you are very consistent with the food that you put into your body as well.
Absolutely. Next question here is about shoes. And the question was, how often should I replace my shoes?
So
let's talk about it. My advice would be to replace your shoes when there's holes in them. I do think that there is these marketing words that you need to replace your runners or trainers or shoes every 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or 10,000 Ks or 5,000 Ks, or, you know, I've heard them all. So I don't know which one is meant to be the right one, but I do think that most of it is just a marketing term. And there is some science and data that supports that. So when we look at lower body related injuries, when it comes to running, we see that there's no significant difference between, quote, old shoes. So shoes that have been, you know, worn in and worn out, holes in them. When we're comparing those shoes to, you know, brand new shoes, there's no significant difference between any experiences with pain or injuries when it comes to things like running. So if you're feeling that you are, you know, maybe are having some foot related pain or some lower body related pain, and you want to blame your shoes and you need new shoes, the data and the science behind that doesn't support that notion. And maybe you are falling for a bit of a marketing ploy that you need to buy some new shoes. There is some benefits of new shoes, and that may just come simply emotionally. You know, you get some new shoes, you feel like a new identity, you're starting that new journey with a fresh pair of shoes. Great, that's a really powerful thing. And maybe the biggest change you can make in the challenge is by getting yourself some new shoes, and along with that, some new training clothes, and maybe that, you know, reinvents your identity as the fitness person. Great, these are positive steps. But when it comes down to simply a biomechanical sense of when should I replace my shoes, I would say simply when there's holes in them or when they're no longer comfortable. That's probably when you need some new shoes. Or if you want to be really cool and hip in the gym, get some fresh kicks, and you can look really cool. That's totally fine and acceptable thing. But the main takeaway is that there's no need, with a capital N-E-E-D, to get new shoes because you've had them for X amount of time, let that be 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 3 years, 10,000 steps, whatever it is that you do. I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Oh, my gosh. That just reminded me of my dad. It's like, I don't need new shoes. I put tape on there.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, yes.
Nick, next question here is about our good friend, the DEXA scan.
Yes.
Okay. And the question comes in is that this person writes, I've had a DEXA scan and I'm not too sure what some of these letters are. What does LBM mean, or what does SMM mean? And then they also wrote that they're unsure that the body fat percentage number is correct because they've lost weight, but their body fat percentage hasn't changed. Does the body fat percentage number really matter, is what they write. So Nick, lots to unpack here. What advice would you give this person?
Oh, there's heaps to unpack. So feel free to interject and chat to me about DEXA. But also let's just firstly say this is a DEXA scan in a machine lying down, not an in-body one, because I know that they're also called DEXAs, but this is one where you go to a place and you lie in a machine that looks like a CAT scan type thing. So that's one that's done by, a medical professional, and you actually get a printout and you can see the fat on there. And I'll just say firstly, just say you are looking at that picture and the fat is either yellow or green. It depends on what machine you've gone in, but you can see it's got a vast difference. If you can see that that's gone down, then it's gone down. Also, if you can see it in your photos that it's gone down or your clothes, it's gone down, okay? It doesn't matter what that little number says. I'll just preface it by saying that. So when you do a DEXA scan, you kind of have to go in with an element of responsibility, thinking I'm not going to let this get to me no matter what it is. So it's sort of about responsibility with data. So if you're afraid of the scale and other things, or you're not interested in tracking the scale or your measurements, but you go and get a DEXA, it can sometimes be a little bit confronting because you're suddenly confronted with a whole bunch of numbers and you don't know where to look. So LBM is lean body mass. So that's all our non-fat tissue. So that is everything. It includes the water in your body. It includes absolutely everything. So that can actually go up or down in a day. So, if I wanted to get extra lean body mass on a DEXA and I didn't care if my scale weight went up when I was there, I could drink 3 bottles of mineral water in the car park, not wee, and have an extra, well, theoretically, around about 3 kilos of lean body mass on my DEXA. And that would actually then throw my body fat percentage, because the percentages are all based on what you weigh and what's going on. So I don't want to tell anyone to do that because you're paying for a scan, but I'm just saying that's how that works. It doesn't understand emotion about you and how you feel about it, so it's just going to read what's going on.
Yeah, another point to add onto that would be like gut residue. So if you have a big breakfast or maybe a big meal, dinner the night before, that food is still in your digestive system, let that be in your stomach or your large intestine. You know, maybe you haven't gone to the toilet that morning, like that still adds to the lean body mass as well.
And then we've got the skeletal muscle mass. Now that's if I'm right, that's the everything minus so it's your skeleton. Yeah, basically it's what's going on plus then muscle. But then the difference between the skeletal muscle mass and the lean body mass, what is that difference?
Yeah, so skeletal muscle mass is how much muscle we have, and that's measured by the total lean body mass minus our skeleton, which is measured by the bone mineral density. So that it gets tricky as well, because that first number, the lean body mass, might be a little bit incorrect. Yes. Bone mineral density is usually quite correct because they're using x-rays to get the bone mineral density. And we actually use DEXA scans to scan for things like osteoporosis, that bone weakening disease that women experience when they kind of go through menopause. So then skeletal muscle mass is kind of everything else, but that also includes things like our organs and connective tissue and such. So it gets a little bit tricky. Yeah.
Because it's based on the LBM. So that's the thing. So even that is a fluid number because it has to be interactive with the LBM, so the lean body mass. So I think you can probably compare one that you've had done to another one, but then it also depends on your gut residue and what's, as you said, and the percentage of water in your body at the time. So it is just a snapshot in time. And the machine itself can have error rates of up to 10% per unit. It sometimes needs a service. I remember when I used to go and get them done and they said, oh, sorry, it's having a service. So then it will depend on who's servicing it, what's gone on there, who's running the machine. They do position you in a particular way. So therefore, if you're just a little bit off, it could also skew the reading. It sounds like you shouldn't bother getting one, but they're kind of fun to have. Just don't attach all your emotion to it. I think it's better to reflect on your strategy. Like, what are you getting a DEXA scan for? What do you want to hear from the DEXA scan? What is it that you want to know? Because the body fat percentage is irrelevant. As we said, even the lean body mass is pretty difficult to determine. For me, the best way I know that muscle is happening on me is that I am actually getting stronger in my lifts in the gym. It's as simple as that. That's like the only measure that I can have. And if my weight, my body weight is either the same or going down, and I'm getting stronger, then I know that I'm in a really, really good spot, because that's just my way of doing that. Just the thing is, if you really want to measure stuff, it all comes back to, what do you have available in your house? You have your scales, your bathroom scales. So we would never say, don't measure your food. Don't track your food, because your food might get sad that your potato might get sad that it's 600 grams instead of 500 grams. You know, we don't say that. We don't attach emotion to the food in that way. We just weigh it and it is what it is, and we move on with our day. I think we need to get to that point, unless you've had, you know, extensive history of being triggered by the scale. I think you need to analyze that as your data, because it's free. Well, it's cheap. And it's something that you can manage. You don't have to tell anyone. You can write it all down. And that is going to be your best indication, to be honest, if you are losing body fat. I mean, I know that we say don't just rely on that, but over time, averages, if you're trying to lose body fat, the scale should be going down. Of course, if you're recomping and gaining muscle at the same time, it's a little bit different. But when you're in the initial phases of losing body fat, and just say you've got 30 kilos to lose, the scale's going to go down. You might lose some muscle as well. And, another way to think of it is, if you're saving up for a house and you're scared to look at your bank balance, and everyone's going to you, yeah, don't look at your bank balance, don't worry about it. You kind of think, well, how am I ever going to know? What's going to happen there? You know, how's the bank going to be able to help me? How's anything going to happen for me? You kind of need to look at your body in that way as well. So I'd love to encourage people to interact with the scale. I know that we do say non-scale victories and all sorts of stuff like that, but a scale victory could be for you just being able to write down your numbers and not get disheartened by it, because it's just data. So I think that you need to be able to study your body as though it isn't, you know, it's not attached to whether you're a good or bad person. There's so many, you know, more things to you. But a DEXA scan is a snapshot in time. It's a nice thing to have. It's a bit of fun. It's interesting. It's like being in an alien machine. And really, I love to look at people's DEXAs and see just the layer of fat coming away. If there's no fat on there, on a place that there used to be, you're doing a good job. If there's more of that yellow stuff on there in different places, you could say, okay, what's going on? And that's what it's there for as well. It might be there to give you a kick up the ass, to be honest. So that's DEXA.
Good answer. I like it. And, you know, I just want to really touch on that idea that, you know, if you do go and get something like a DEXA scan and you compare two DEXA scans, or maybe you're doing it on the cheaper, more recommended version, you know, measuring your body weight, and maybe you are collecting your data more frequently. You're measuring every single day, averaging it out. And if you're not losing body weight, or the DEXA scan is showing that you're not losing body fat, or you're losing lots of skeletal muscle or something, like, we want to use that data to make better decisions.
Absolutely.
Because it might come down to simply that the strategy that you're implementing isn't working. And it could be as simple as that. Maybe that is because you're following the challenge program, but you're only adherence 80% of the time. Maybe you've inputted your starting numbers a little bit incorrectly. Maybe you aren't getting your steps in. Maybe you're not training as hard at the gym. Maybe you are kind of picking at the fridge or nibbling on the foods here and there, and, you know, being a little bit relaxed on the weekend when it comes to our food intake. Maybe all these things are the reason why you're not losing weight. And it comes down to that reflection of going, okay, how can I do this better? Because if the numbers aren't reflecting that, when we could try spinning it as many ways as we want, but if it is simply not coming down to you're not losing weight, well, I'm sorry, you're not losing weight. And we may need to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, well, what we're doing right now isn't working. We might need to find another way to achieve this. And that's okay, because that's part of the whole process. You know, that's part of it, because sometimes what we're doing isn't working. And that's like with life. If you're trying to save for a house and you're not saving for a house, well, you're not saving for a house. So, right?
Yeah. Yeah, people can tell you that you're doing a good job, and you are. That's the whole thing. Just because the results aren't what you'd like, that doesn't actually mean that you're not doing a good job. You know, if you're showing up every day, if you're even engaging with your results, you're already a killer. You're already in the 1%. You know, it's just, it's a way of also thinking, how can I improve? And the other thing is, give it time. Even if it's been a year, I mean, you want to start dropping body fat, but it takes a while to get your mojo in the gym. You know, when you first start lifting and engaging with the heavier weights, it does take a while. You know, I mean, I've been doing it for 20 years, if not more. So, and I'm still learning.
Yeah. Well, even just that concept where if you've just started resistance training or just started going to the gym and you're not noticing any changes, look, it might come down to simply the way that you're approaching training. And it might take a few years just for you to learn how to train your body. And that's okay, because it's easy to make your body tired. It's different to train it. And it might be a bit of a learning process. And again, it just goes back to continuous reflection. Try to measure what we can, and make decisions to alter our strategies that we can get closer to where we want to be. And that's a real scientific method. And you know, that might be that you try a weird and wacky diet. Maybe you readjust your approach. Maybe you try a new system, a new environment, a new way to do meal prep, a new approach to food, whatever it is. We've got to keep trying different things until we see the results that we want and we are confident that they're the changes that we're making.
Yeah, and just do interact with as many ways of measuring your data as you possibly can.
That's right. The final question here is about the recovery diet. And the question is there any difference between gradually increasing calories to maintenance or immediately increasing calories? Mm. Okay. So this one is all like theoretical. So the main idea is that we want to gradually increase our calories from an energy deficit back to maintenance in a recovery diet. And we want to do that over the course of at least 2 weeks, preferably, you know, over the course of like, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, but we want to do it for at least 2 weeks. So the main idea is that our body does go through an element of adaptation. So as we go through an energy deficit, so you've gone from 2000 calories down to maybe 1500 calories, the body over time adapts to that, where your metabolism or your energy expenditure slowly decreases to get closer and closer to that 1500 calorie intake that you have. Which is one reason why we kind of meet like plateaus in our journey, is because our body kind of adapts to that energy intake. Now, we want to kind of go through an opposite way, where we're gradually increasing our energy intake and then allowing our body time to adapt to that kind of newer energy intake. And that adaptation normally occurs in our NEAT. So our non-exercise activity thermogenesis, you know, like how active we are as a person, that's closely linked to our overall energy expenditure and our metabolism, big impact in our metabolism. So if you were to rapidly increase your calories, let's say from 1500 calories to 2000 calories, because we've determined that maybe 2000 calories is exactly what our maintenance is, there is a risk and a chance of some fat gain to occur, because our body has adapted down to maybe that 1600 calories, even though we could be at 2000 calories for maintenance. So it would be more optimal to gradually increase our calories, maybe from, let's say, 1500 to maybe that 1750 and then to 2000 over like a course of 2 weeks to allow our body to kind of, you know, in a simple way, like absorb those calories where we kind of go, oh yeah, I have this extra energy. I can train a little bit harder in the gym. I can maybe go for another walk in the day. I can do the housework. I can play with my kids. I can be a little bit more bouncy and more energetic, more animated when I'm talking. They're the kind of small things that we want to occur in our body over time so that we reach maintenance rather than what we experience when we are having low calories, where we feel kind of like that lethargic, we feel kind of tired. We may not be super motivated to go for a walk or play with our kids or do the laundry and those types of things because of that adaptation occurring. So the main takeaway is that it would be more optimal to gradually increase your calories to allow your body to adapt. And if you do it too quickly, that can cause some fat gain to occur before your body kind of catches up to that new calorie intake to maintenance. Okay.
Very good.
The recovery diet. I would recommend that you be diligent with your recovery diets. You know, if you do it correctly, it can be a great way to healthily, if that's a word again, I'm making up words today, to go through to recover from the diet that we've done in a healthy way so that we can reach maintenance and support our body's function. You know, we're talking about hormones, we're talking about our overall health and well-being while we kind of transition out of a diet. And it's more important when we've been dieting for long periods of time. So, you know, 12 plus weeks, more important. Or if we've lost really large amounts of weight. So I'm talking, you know, 10 to 20% of our body weight, more important to kind of go through that recovery diet where we slowly increase our weight because it can be a bit of a slippery slope for lots of rapid weight to come back on if we kind of go too quickly. Okay.
It's a very sensitive time, isn't it?
Yes.
In your body. Yes. And you've got to just try, you've really got to manage that just as well, if not better than the dieting phase, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're screwed.
Yeah, it's a sensitive spot, like you said. And that's often the point where we kind of fall off and you may be thinking of this when you see previous challenges, and not to point out any one person individual, but if you look at, let's say, previous top 10s, they look amazing, they look great. And then within a month later, they may have rebounded. Maybe you know someone who's lost a lot of weight, and then next time you see them 3 months later, they've rebounded. And that's because we're in this sensitive state where we know weight loss, we know restriction, but we don't know how to make our way back safely into like a maintenance zone. And often we go overboard and we kind of move past maintenance too quickly back into an energy surplus and back to where we were. So it is this sensitive time, and we do need to give it that respect and time of day as we move back into that maintenance. And often that's the hardest part about dieting, is not dieting.
Exactly. And also your hunger signals are all over the place as well. So you can really get it wrong. Your body can tell you it's still hungry when you've eaten so much that it's ridiculous. And it's not regulated very well. So something like a recovery diet is perfect. Just slowly, gradually, exactly how you got into it is how you get out of it.
So good. Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 47 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. You could share it on Instagram, share it with a friend, maybe message us directly. It's always really nice to get those messages that you've enjoyed this show. If you have any questions for us to answer, you can always find in the show notes a link to a form where you can leave us a question and we'll be able to answer it for you. And we will be joining you next year for episode number 48. That'll probably be about mid-January. And it's been an exciting time. So enjoy your holidays. Have a Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. And hopefully you enjoy your summer if you're in Australia. And enjoy that time off.
Yeah. Enjoy, everybody. We'll see you next year.